Welcome to What in God's Name. He's Chris Owen.
She's Shayna Appel.
Welcome to the show that attempts to ask deep questions as we reflect on current issues facing our culture, our society, from a theological perspective.
Shayna, we've talked about wanting to be bridge builders, and I wanted to say something about that as people learn about us and learn about this podcast. Sometimes people think that bridge building is about easy agreement or rolling over and just kind of going limp in the face of controversy.
Well, the only people who would say that are people who have never attempted to build bridges, Chris.
I would say so as well. So I just want to be clear that building bridges is about finding disagreement and using disagreement creatively.
Absolutely.
That's what we're intending to do with the bridges that we build. So we're not about easy agreement or avoiding controversy or avoiding disagreement. We're about surfacing them and being curious about what that can lead to creatively.
A holy curiosity. Yes, being curious and also being respectful. And I think that's the key word missing from much of what I hear daily in the news and in the media. So yeah, sounds good. Let's get to it.
Shayna, we received an email from friend of the podcast, Kyle, in Seoul, South Korea.
That is so cool.
He was responding to our shows about Christmas. Just a second. I'm going to put on some music for us. Ah, there it is. The reason for the music will become clear as we hear the email. So this is what Kyle has to say. As for what the holiday is like in Korea and Japan, we don't have Black Friday, mostly because Thanksgiving is in October. And despite the Christmas trees going up in mid-November, there isn't any commercialism or salesmanship at all. It's mostly pretty lights and upbeat music to distract from bitterly cold weather. He goes on to say, the actual December 25th has been adopted as a long-term couples holiday that celebrates having survived a calendar year together.
That is so awesome.
Valentine's Day means something else completely here. This is no small part because the most popular Christmas song in East Asia by several metric miles is, for reasons that are too lengthy and charming to detail here, Last Christmas by Wham.
Okay, that's hysterical. And Kyle, you will have to email us back and tell us why that song is significant in South Korea.
And then he concludes by saying, so it's much more Mary and Joseph than Jesus, but at least it's about love.
That is so awesome. And how interesting to be reminded again how these traditions vary around the world.
Kyle,
thanks for reaching out to us. That's fantastic. Good to hear from you.
And we remind everybody that you can contact us. In fact, we are eager for you to contact us because this isn't simply a conversation between Shayna and me. It's a conversation that we want to have with you. So reach out to us on Facebook, What in God's Name, or send an email. You can send an email directly to us. You can go to our website, whatingods.com. That's whatingods.com. Shayna, one of the things that we intend to do with What in God's Name is to be topical and to respond to what's in the news quickly. We have analysis from political pundits and partisans, and we don't get analysis from a philosophical or a theological perspective. So we want to be topical, and here's what's in the news.
Bring it on.
The New York Times is talking about Facebook in a couple of ways. One is the Russian disinformation. The other way that Facebook is in the news is in regards to how it's sharing its data with big Silicon Valley
companies.
I want to focus on the Russian disinformation element to it. And so briefly, to bring our audience up to speed, if you're not following this story, a woman by the name of Renee DiResta headed a study, independent study, that made a report to the Senate Intelligence Committee. And basically, she's, and I'm quoting from her op-ed in the New York Times, Russia was able to masquerade as a collection of American media entities managing fake personas, developing communities of influence over a period of years, this has been happening, to exploit existing political and social divisions within the United States. So this is not breaking news. We've been hearing about this for a while.
Yes, we have.
What is news is that the Senate Intelligence Committee is releasing this report and that it's a part of the public conversation at this time. So here's a thought. What Russia has done with this disinformation campaign is somewhat similar to 9/11.
Say more.
Before everybody gets up in arms about this, because certainly there are very important differences. 9/11 was violent and resulted in thousands of deaths. And so obviously a Russian disinformation campaign is not violent in that way. The similarity is this that I see. Both 9/11 and this Russian disinformation campaign are using the tools of an open society to create destruction. The hijackers used the freedom of mobility, the access we have to airplanes, to create, obviously, massive destruction. The Russians are using our access to free information, to our ability to be connected to each other on social media, to sow its own kind of destruction. It's a different kind. An interesting question is the kind of destruction that disinformation sows. It is not physically destructive, but it is corrosive, destructive of social connections. But I'll stop there for a second. That's the similarity I see, that it, interestingly enough, it uses, both instances use our openness, what we value as freedom, and exploits it for destructive purposes.
That's an interesting thought, Chris. And I suppose some ethicists might begin at the place of our strength is also the source of our weakness, that what we gain by virtue of being an open society consequently and almost inevitably leaves us vulnerable to that type of exploitation. Because the next question is going to be, how do we respond to it? And if the question of response is to limit the openness of our society, then effect those who have attacked us have succeeded in taking away from us our very strength. But it does, I think, leave people feeling vulnerable in ways that are interesting, because particularly with the Facebook issue that's all over the news right now, that is so far beyond our control. I mean, you pretty much have two choices, right? If you want not to be exploited, then you take yourself off of Facebook. And by taking yourself off of Facebook, again, you've limited the openness that Facebook offers you. So you've given up something in order not to be exploited. I don't know. Does that make any sense?
Sure.
To you?
Sure.
Do you have any other thoughts on that?
When I think about the exploitation of something good for evil purposes, to me, that's a mirror of the human psyche. I mean, so this might end up being a conversation of, again, your more hopeful view of human nature and my darker perspective on it. The internet is a mirror of this. There's the good internet, and then there's the bad internet. I mean, the internet is just this kind of, it's a picture of human capability and human goodness, and it's this place of just human depravity and exploitation and place where evil can take root and grow.
A reflection, in other words, of our culture.
Yeah.
You know, as you were saying that, I was thinking that, you know, we're so close to Christmas, and I'm thinking that, yeah, we're about to celebrate, you know, the quote-unquote savior of the world coming into form as this vulnerable baby, that for many Christians, I would suggest those of us who wish to follow the life and ministry of Jesus Christ have to assume some vulnerability. In this one, again, it's like, is the openness of our society where Facebook is concerned worth it at this point? And oh, by the way, where are the ethics and morality of the people who are running that show?
Well, yeah, there you go. So if I'm following you, your question is, or your maybe there's a question and an observation, but the observation is that the openness of our society is somewhat like the vulnerability of Jesus.
Yes.
And therefore, somewhat similar to the vulnerability that any human being would exercise as the part of a human life, like even in a close, intimate relationship with a spouse or partner, there are instances where you open yourself up in vulnerability. And if you're in a good relationship, that vulnerability is held and received and tenderly cared for, whereas in a not healthy relationship, that vulnerability can be exploited.
Yes, absolutely.
And hurtful to the one who has been vulnerable, to the one who has opened oneself up. That's very interesting. So,
but I mean, the nature of humanity, I mean, the nature of humanity is inescapably vulnerable. And now I'm drawing from, you know, my history as a medical professional, but we are these vulnerable little skin bags down here running around on planet Earth, and there's all kinds of bad stuff that can happen to us. That's part of the human condition, is knowing that we live and that we will die. And so if the state of humanity is inherently vulnerable, how does that influence our thinking about how we walk on this planet, which, oh, by the way, is also vulnerable, and how we walk with one another, which leads us to those great central questions that I think are at the heart of most of the world's religious traditions. Who are we? How did we get here? How shall we live with one another? So am I willing to shut down my Facebook page in order to protect myself? Well, I could do that. It ultimately doesn't make me a whole lot safer, because something else will pop up somewhere else. It's a many-headed hydra. Or do I hang in there as a part of a larger community that is demanding accountability and demanding a higher ethic and morality? Because technology, human beings are inherently inventive. We are seeing breakthroughs in medical technology that are so far beyond our capacity to ethically and morally think about the implications of those things. So I think that the openness of the web, the world out there, and the internet, and operations like Facebook and Instagram are the next frontier. And we've opened it, we've gone out there into the wilderness, and now we've got to figure it out. Facebook provides a lot of good. We're on, you know, what in God's name has a Facebook page? I have a personal Facebook page. I believe you do too. I enjoy being out there. I enjoy finding out what's going on with my colleagues. I enjoy the professional chat groups that are going out there. There's much good to be gained out there in the web wilderness. However, it does push us to stop and to think and reflect.
As I was reflecting as you were speaking, the Russian government, of course, I'm separating the Russian government from the Russian people.
Thank you.
So the Russian government under Putin is interested in sowing discord and chaos.
Around the world, it seems.
That regime is not going to be persuaded by refined theological reflection on vulnerability. In fact, in the tradition of Lenin, any expression of vulnerability or weakness is to be exploited. So
the inclination would be to fight back militarily, that's humanity's inclination. However.
How about fighting back in a different way?
Amen.
Okay. So how about fighting back? So now we're in the realm of international politics. How about developing capacities for the United States to be stronger in resisting these efforts to use openness and vulnerability to sow discord? In other words, and basically I'm referring then to this report that the Senate Intelligence Committee released. There are suggestions out there. There are policy suggestions for strengthening the collaboration between these tech companies, outside independent contractors who can monitor who is actually using these accounts, and the government. Like, here is another example to get into political philosophy. Here is another example of where big government is needed.
Absolutely.
You cannot have government not being involved in developing a robust response to the exploitation of the internet.
Absolutely. I would also suggest that there are some internal moral and ethical fixes that every individual can do, and that is to, you know, learn to read this stuff, learn to filter what you hear by what it's trying to produce. And if somebody is out there attempting to create division, first of all, learning to recognize division, because sometimes it's very subtle, learning to recognize that division and learning to call it what it is and step back and ask the questions: what's their motive? What's in it for them? What do they stand to gain? Because ultimately, this nation and this world are not going to survive one over the other. So long as anyone is oppressed anywhere, there is going to be discord. And we talk about building the kingdom of heaven, and I use kingdom, not kingdom, because I think kindom, a world where all are kin, is much more in alignment with what I understand to be the teachings of Jesus Christ. That if we are going to be builders of the kingdom, we are going to need to recognize discord when we see it. We're going to need to be able to name it, and we're going to need to be able to shut it down. Shut it off. Walk away. Do not buy into it. And that's something that each and every one of us can do.
Are you drawing a distinction between discord and disagreement?
Yes.
I think you are too. It's an interesting distinction. Can I take a shot at it?
Go for it.
I think what you're meaning by discord and what I would mean by discord is a malicious intent to divide.
Divide people one each from each and each from all.
And disagreement, which is how we started this show talking about bridge building, disagreement is natural, part of the human condition, and something that disagreement can be used to sow discord, and
disagreement is used to sow discord,
and or disagreement can be used to sow
build
deeper
bridges.
Connections.
Yeah, and to build those bridges, which is what we were talking about earlier. You have a different opinion from me, therefore we are in disagreement. When I use that difference of opinion to marginalize you, now I'm sowing discord.
I love that distinction, and I love actually how you were talking about the habits of mind. That's the phrase I use. You didn't use the word, the term,
but I
the
like
phrase,
that,
habits of mind, of someone who on their Facebook page is reading something that really speaks to their already formed confirmation bias. What you're calling for is pause, look at it, consider, be more thoughtful. This is a capacity of free citizens in an open society. Is to be more discerning, to have the habits of mind to be critical, to ask where this information is coming from. And that's part of what this podcast is about. We, if we're doing well, we're modeling this kind of way of approaching questions. Be curious.
Being curious, yep.
And in some instances, being curious means being skeptical.
What was the word you used, Chris? You said confirmation.
Confirmation bias.
Yes, it affirms our... Say more about that, because I think... If I had the power to give people a superpower, I think it would be an awareness of our confirmation bias.
Sure.
So can you say more about that?
I mean, this would be philosophy. It's really the branch of philosophy I understand to be epistemology. How do we know things? We all go into the world with a conceptual framework, like a map in our heads about how the world works and who's good and who's bad and those kinds of preconceived notions that we have learned and that our experience has informed. And so we go into the world looking at the world in a certain way. All of us do. It's part of the human being. We tend to look for things in the world that confirm the way that we already look at the world. And that's confirmation bias. Selectively searching out those things which all confirm what we already believe about the world.
It feels right, therefore it must be right.
Yeah, it's in agreement with how I see things, so therefore it must be true.
Right, yeah. Part of the challenge is that I think there are many people out there who don't know that or would not believe that. I think just that awareness alone would bring us eons past where we are right now.
Be curious, Shayna.
Go deep, Chris.
And shed light. We are What in God's Name, and as I mentioned, you can visit us on our Facebook page, What in God's Name. Just type that into your search bar, and you will find us. You will find some other things when you type in What in God's Name on Facebook.
Yes,
we
you
are
will.
The logo with the flame. Also, of course, you can go to our website, whatingods.com, whatingods.com. We are not going to be with you next Thursday, the 27th. We'll return with our first show of 2019 on the first Thursday of January.
The first Thursday in January. I have no idea.
Cool. That's when we'll be. This is all getting edited out. We will be with you on the first Thursday of January 2019. Meanwhile, Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year.